We can get started. The agenda, I don't know. I thought it said 2:30. No break, right? Okay, there's a small change in the agenda. So we're going to start off with a deep dive on B2B now, and it's going to be for 30 minutes. And then after that, we have the MSCIS, the MSIT Xbox team presenting here about their experience on how they are planning to use BizTalk services. So Anil's team will be presenting the next 30 minutes. So that's a small change in the agenda. Okay, so let's get started. The focus of this presentation, we'll talk about B2B. What are the capabilities, what we have? We'll slightly go under the hood. Hopefully we should cover much ground in 30 minutes. And if not, I'll be available offline and we can go into the detail, real details, and see if something is missing, if something needs more clarification. I'll be available for discussions. Right? With that, let's start off with the announcement that was made yesterday, right? Now, EDI capabilities is available in all editions, and this slide summarizes the variations that you see across the four SKUs. So developer, basic, standard, premium, and there's a variation in the number of agreements that you can create between the trading partners, right? So obviously, basic has a lower number, and it reaches to a good sizable number for premium. Right? An agreement is, again, like we said, it's between two profiles of a partner, and we'll see that in detail in today's presentation. The other thing I would want to call out is archiving. Archiving both for X12 and AS2 is available in the premium edition. Of course, it is also available in the developer edition, but that's for non-production test only, right? So if you want archiving and go live, premium is the right SKU, and of course, you're welcome to use basic and standard. Okay, let's go into the details. Now, I would want to focus on two things. One, look at how the agreement is set up and what are the track records we generate. So first, let's start by understanding the agreement model, right? Like, what are the different concepts that we expose and how are they related? What you see here is the snapshot of the agreement object model. So when you create a deployment, as part of the deployment, we instantiate a service that is listening on which you can add a service reference in Visual Studio. And you can have a data service, WCF data service reference to each of these objects. So that's pretty much the object model, right? In terms of the specifics of the model, it's tied to the concepts that we learned yesterday, right? So we have a partner, and the partner has multiple profiles. Profiles as part of businesses. And two profiles participate in an agreement. So agreement essentially holds a reference, in some sense, to a business profile, right? And when one or more agreements have been created, they constitute in a partnership. So interestingly, we don't expose the notion of partnership in the BizTalk portal, but this is an object model level representation, right? So you would have to create each of these blue box, by the way, are WCF data objects, right? When you create your C# class, you will be creating a partnership object, agreement, business profile, and partner objects, right? And once you have your agreement, an agreement is composed of two settings, like you saw the send settings and the receive settings. So they are WCF data objects at the level of protocol settings. It defines your send side agreement settings and receive side agreement settings. We'll see what that means. Let me quickly jump to Visual Studio. So what you would do is, the way you would start off is just open any C# project, right? You need to download WCF Data Service 5.3. So it's available on the web. You download WCF Data Service 3.3, and then you add a service reference in your project, right? And your service reference is typically your deployment name. Followed by a keyword called default. Default is the namespace under which the deployment has the OM created. And then you would need to refer to the partner management interface and then its metadata, right? So this is the URL that you would have to add, and then you say go. Hopefully I'm connected to internet. So once you connect it, what you get is a TPM context object, right? The TPM context object is going to list the set of all objects that we are going to expose from the OM. The first one, agreements, is a collection. So whenever you see an object with an ending with an S, it's a collection of the objects like an agreement. Batch descriptions relate to your batch definitions. Like yesterday we created an agreement with a count of 3. So the batch definition holds the definition of a batch. Business identities are your sender and receiver identity information. Like the example we talked about yesterday was, hey, what's the DUNS number? What's your social security number? What's the ZZ, like Contoso Fabricam number that you would identify in the message? That string is part of the business identities, right? Business profile, we've already seen. It's the organization level businesses that communicate to each other. Cert references, if you're using AS2, then you're referring to AS2 certificates, which are actually from the certificate store. That's the certificate references. Contacts, name says what it is. Contacts is used in partners and profiles where you know who owns that particular entity or the admin to whom you would reach out to. Custom settings is part of mostly name value pairs. You would tie that to the agreement settings, right? Typically, it's more for internal purpose at the moment. One-way agreement, the agreement that you create on your send and receive side constitutes one-way agreement, right? So you agree on a send and you agree on a receive. So that's the one-way agreement. And one-way agreement is between two partners. Again, the partnership object. Protocol settings is the actual setting. So the distinction between protocol settings and one-way agreements is every one-way agreement has two profiles participating in it. So there's a partner who's receiving a message, and there's a partner who's sending a message on that contract. And protocol settings actually models the send of another partner with a receive of the other partner. So a send of one and a receive of another together constitute a one-way agreement. And that one-way agreement is part of send and receive. And therefore, you will have two one-way agreements and four protocol settings that participate in one agreement. So that's like the fundamental lay of land for the OM model, right? We'll see that in an example, just so concepts are clear. And then you have a bunch of X12-based settings because the deployment that I connected to had only X12. Had there been EDIFACT, then you would see the EDIFACT-related object settings. I wouldn't go into the details of what they are, but essentially, settings specific to a schema, your settings, your separators, all of that can be found under that object. Right? So once you have that object setting, all you have to do is just add it as a service reference into your project. And you can start referring to, of course, you can have a using of that entity. And then all you need is a way to first connect to that deployment. So the way you would do it is first get your ACS token. So you would need to know your base URL, which is your deployment. And then you would have to, you need the issuer name and the issuer secret, right? So once you have gotten the token, what you do is you program against the objects that we discussed, right? So the you would have a partner management reference that I have added earlier, similar to the service reference. And in that, you will have an object of a partner. and each partner will have the name or description, right? And what you would add to is the context object. So if you look at the context object is what you you get at the end of the service reference, right? The TPM context object. So any partner agreement protocol settings object you add would be added into the context object, and then you would just save the changes, and that therefore ensures that they are persisted in the OM. The part that I would want to focus on is related to set links and add links. How many of you in this room have used WCF data services? Okay, very few. So generally when the way things work, let me go back to this diagram. The way things would work is whenever you see a link between two objects, you would essentially have to model not just the objects, but you would have to actually model the links as well. So that's essentially the premise of given for WCF data. So conceptually, it can get complex in some sense. So you could have a client-side wrapper DLL that kind of abstracts the whole set link, add link kind of functionality. So for example, let's say now you create a partner, right? And then you create a profile. You would also have to say set the link and add this link. So you know that this profile belongs to this partner. That's one side of the link. And you should also say that, hey, this partner is associated with this link. So you need to get both the directions. So going back to the code, I have a partner here, another partner, and I'm creating a business identity, right? A business identity is essentially part of the profile. Notice that as part of my context, all I'm adding is I'm saying context.add to business identity. So the context currently holds the set of objects that I have, my partner, my profile, and my business identities. I need to start linking them, right? So first I have my collection of business identities, and then I have a set link of my identity to this particular business profile, right? So now I have created an associative relationship between my business identity and my business profile, right? And I'm doing the converse. Now I'm saying that, hey, this business profile is part of this profile A. So now I need to do an add link of the collection of business identities. I need to mention the identity and link it with the profile A. So if there's a 1:1 relationship, you obviously get the N part using the collection and then do an add link, and you do the converse. You go to the parent, one side of the relationship, and then do a set link, add link there as well. So the way you would build the model is essentially follow the sequence. Of course, although this diagram doesn't show identities, identities are somewhere here in the picture, right? There can be N identities associated with one profile. So once that is done, essentially the code would create a partnership as well, and the partnership will be between between two partners, right? So you would have to identify partnership as A and B. The terminology A and B is saying who is your hosted partner and who is your guest partner. In the UI, you had your left-hand side where you said, hey, this is Microsoft. Microsoft is talking to, laptop company X, right? So that company is my partnership as B. So I would have to now model this relationship, going back to the diagram. Here, I would have a partnership consisting of two partners. So I have to say who is my partnership as A and who is my partnership as B in my settling-add-link relationship, right? And if we were to go one level deep, then once my partner profile and agreement is created, I would have to go into the agreement details. And agreement also has the collection, and because now you have two sides of the agreement, right? Send side, receive side. So that would be my agreement as A and agreement as B, right? And the corresponding settings of that agreement as A and agreement as B would have the one-way agreements that one-way agreements and the corresponding protocol settings. And if you look at the one-way protocol settings, you would define as part of the protocol settings A to B and the protocol settings B to A, right? So pretty much, I've just omitted a bunch of sections. Even if you go into the classes, you can actually set the individual properties of the OM right to the level of saying the separators, how do you handle, do you enable NRR, things of that sort. This is an AS2 agreement. So similar concepts. Yep. That's right. So earlier in the, let me go back to the portal, right? So what we did in yesterday's session, so that's because it's, I just need to refresh. So yesterday we saw through the portal how you can create a partner, right? So this one is a way for you to build your custom portals, if you will, right? Let's say the scenario might be that you're integrating your partner onboarding scenario, right? MSCS is a good example. They onboard partners on a regular basis. Now, it's not that you would want to tie your business process with what is happening at the portal. You could say that, hey, if you go to the SharePoint site and say, hey, these are the 10 things he has to do along with a human workflow, and once he presses submit, you verify the data, and at the end of that process, you want to be able to create a partner, you could have that integrated with SharePoint. You could host your worker role, have SharePoint talk to this worker role, create an OM API and have them onboard, as opposed to the admin coming into the portal and creating a partner. Both of us possible. It again depends on the scenario you'd want to adopt. Yeah.
I assume this is what the trading partner migration tool you demoed yesterday.
Exactly. So the trading partner migration tool uses the OM API, and we in some sense, on one side we connect to BizTalk server, the management DB, and get to the OM details. But on the Azure side, we actually implement it using the OM API. Good observation. Any other questions? Okay. So I'll go back to the deck. So pretty much, you know, there are a bunch of samples out there. There's a sample for AS2, X12. The nitty-gritties is an understanding that Centrelink can essentially have your model laid out, right? One of the things we want to do is have a client-side wrapper. You know, if you look at C#, you're probably going to say reference as dot set or something like that, right? And you essentially wrap that dot set link add link, which is more WCF data service oriented. We are thinking through that. Maybe we would just have a sample client side DLL, you know, like you have a service bus DLL, you might have an OM API BizTalk service DLL that you just import instead of adding a service reference, and that might simplify a lot. So we are looking at that. So that's about the agreement model. So the next thing I would want to look at is how we do tracking with respect to AS2, right? How many of you in this room are familiar with an EDI message? Like if I go into the okay, you guys are the right audience. So I'll fairly leave it at a higher level and you guys would know more details. I just picked some sample message. I think this is the same message we sent yesterday. But the point of the slide is, we're just laying the land, saying what goes into a message, typically in EDI, right? There's a header called an interchange, which is between, again, two partners going one level below. There's something called a group. Group consists of a bunch of transactions, and transactions have a type. It can be a purchase order, invoice, and set of groups you batch. You can send and receive this as an EDI message, right? That's just the basics, right? So now let's keep this message in mind. First, let me walk you through a demo of how things are working. Then we'll revisit back with the model and see how we can relate the two, right? So let's go back to this portal. So the way the demo is set up, I'm going to use the same agreement that I showed yesterday, the confab X12 agreement. But there's one little change that I did, which is I went to the receive route settings, right? And what I did was I have created a default route all messages, but instead of pushing it to the good queue, bad queue example that we took yesterday, what I'm going to do is I'm going to route it to a BizTalk bridge, right? And this is the bridge where I have a custom pipeline component where I receive a message and convert it to a PDF. Right. So just so we see that things are working, this is the bridge that I'm using, right? It's called a PDF invoice bridge. And what I have is I'm just expecting an orders XML message. I have an enriched stage with a reference to a DLL that can take that XML message and generate a PDF. And this is my, I have a source code that uses that generate PDF invoice code. It generates the DLL. I have capability to sign the PDF as well, but I'll leave that one out. And I have referenced that in my custom pipeline code, right? So I have deployed this one. So if I go back to my portal, I can see that I have deployed that particular bridge from Visual Studio, and Samir's a real presentation would have shown through how you do, deploy, debug, and all of that. And so I've got this custom pipeline with the bridge deployed. So, and in my agreement, I just refer to this bridge, like you saw. Now, what I'm going to do is take a client-side application, pump a message, which the one you saw, and we're going to route the message from the EDI bridge, which is essentially your agreement, on the receive side, connect it to an EAI bridge, and it's an invoice message, and in the process, I get an EDI XML. EDI XML is converted to the orders XML that's understood by EAI, give it to the custom pipeline component, generate a PDF, and in the process, it's going to send me an email to my ID, and I'm going to get a PDF invoice in my mailbox. Right? That's the demo setup. So let's see, this is the URL. Hopefully I've got that saved. Yeah. So again, message sender, BizTalk demo, ACS credentials. This is my receive URL. The sample instance is 850. Right, this is the same one that you saw on screen. This looks good. And then I'm going to route it to the bridge, right? So let me push that. So the interesting part is when I send a message through a tool like Message Sender, right, you would always get saying message successful, right? It's not like an EAI bridge where you actually get a failure. The intent being that, hey, you cannot always throw back an error to your partner saying 401, sorry, like send me a message later, right? So we always accept the message. But what happens next is determined by your route settings, right? You can route it to success or you can route it to suspend. So in some sense, although it says message received successfully, I wouldn't trust this tool. So I would actually go back to my tracking settings and make sure that we actually receive the message. So there's a bunch of entries that we generate. So let's see, it's 3 p.m. So that's somewhere around this time frame. So notice that it has gone to the success route. So I know for sure that although I received the message and told my partner that I have processed the message, I also know that it has crossed my EDI bridge and it has been pushed to the EAI bridge, right? So, and if you look at the records, it's been sorted on time. So I know that the exit pipeline processing was called. So if I go to the details, I know that it actually tells me that the generate signed PDF code was called. So I know that now, hey, the EAI processing has started. And ultimately, if you look at the route, it's going to say, yes, the route of the EAI bridge was also successful, which is a good thing, right? And in this case, the EAI bridge, I believe, is also routing to another queue, maybe the good queue, but that's less interesting, right? So what we have now is, we have the EDI message that has been processed, and it has been routed. And of course, we should see a PDF message. Hopefully, if I'm connected, no. Okay. So this is pretty much like the kind of invoice you would get, right? So you would get a PDF of the message that you sent across, right? You know, you could fill in any values and based on how you manipulate the code. You can pick up the values from what is an item, what is the description, item code, quantity, price, and all of that from the message, and have that pumped into your invoicing. So e-invoicing apparently is, from what I understand, is a big business in Europe, right? So some of these things, like having generate an invoice, sign it, have the PDF invoice as well as an archive message, is something that you could take advantage of. Any questions on this? Okay. Okay, back to the presentation, right? So this is the message that we sent. Now, if you map this to the tracking model, right? So Remember that whenever you create your deployment, we ask for two things. One is your monitoring store, which is for storing the messages, the archiving of the messages in the storage URL, the blobs that we create. And also we ask the connection string to your SQL, Azure SQL database, right? We do create a data model within Azure SQL that stores the track records for the individual items, right? Like, for example, we maintain track records for AS2, for batching, for interchanges. We maintain it for pipeline and source. Source is your transport on which you've received the message. Pipeline is generic enough that it spans all of your EAI and EDI scenarios. And then you have a bunch of transaction set track records, right? Of course, you would have to go to the, like we saw in the last slide, whether the information is at the interchange group or transaction set level, you would have to go at the interchange track records and their ACKs, functional group records, or you would go at the transaction set records and its corresponding ACK. Like you could find the relevant information, right? So if you go to, let's say you go to SQL, the way I connected to this one is I figured out the SQL DB where the BizTalk service deployment is using. I was administrator of this account, so I just logged into the management portal. And if you execute the command, let's say this one I'm executing at the transaction set level, you know that Contesso, Fabricam to Contesso, there was a message that was sent with this tracking ID and with this request ID, right? And the agreement was, this was the one that we just sent, right? So the advantage in some sense is you can use this tracking data to build your own custom reports, right? That's the kind of, not necessarily to say that you get into the gory details of saying, what is my receiver partner ID? That's less interesting, right? And this is the same data that we use to build this view, right, which is more fancy, not the best. You can always use this view if you're more comfortable with or go into the protocol-specific view, look at the same data, right? This is the same data that we saw, the Fabricam to Contesso with an 850, the TAFA request ID, tracking ID, all of this. The data is present in the data model. And you could use this, you know, to build your own custom joins, to even have things like alerting, right? Let's say you want to see if any of the certificates are expiring in the next 6 months. And that's an involved process because it's you and your partner working together on saying what is the next certificate that you would want to use. So you can use this data in building such a solution and, you know, alerting over email. A lot of fancy stuff, the kind of manageability solutions that you can build on top of that, right? Any questions on this one?
Are there any services on this data today?
Yeah, good question. So right now, we have this at the SQL level. So one of the things we are thinking is whether we can wrap this as a, you know, REST API, for example. So at the end of the day, if in the next release, we decided to make changes or make some add columns, rename, whatever, right? We ensure that we don't break your application, right? That's one of the things we are looking at.
In the meantime, you publish the data model.
Yeah, so right now, not all of this is written or in MSDN documentation specifically, but yes, this would be available in some form, like the REST API in the coming future. Yeah. Right now, it's not public. Yeah, you're right. Cool. Let me see. Okay, I think we are pretty much. So these are the two broad topics that I wanted to cover. So I could go on into the more details. I know Anil's team is raring to go on talk about their MSCIS experience. So I would definitely want to give them enough time to be able to cover that. I am available for any questions that you would want to discuss, be it the agreement level, bridges, OM API, any of those stuff. I can show you some running examples. We can go into more details. Okay. I also wanted to, is John in the room? John Fancy is here. So I would want to take a moment. This is more like a plug. John, why don't you come on stage? So John and I have been working on this book called Windows Azure BizTalk Services.
You've got to read the title.
Yeah. That title is something that the publisher will choose, right?
Yeah,
so we've been working on this for a while, and it's near ready.
Yeah. So we're probably, halfway through the review of content and aiming to finish the development by the end of the year. So early next year is the aim to get this published by PACT.
Yeah, so the reason we brought it up is, we wanted to have some sample chapters available, and fortunately, due to some logistics that's pending.
Yep.
So hopefully this should be out by end of this year or maybe early next, Jan, Feb kind of thing. We'd love to have you guys look at this, and of course the MVPs look at review and give us your feedback.
Indeed, yeah. So the aim right now is to try to get the first chapter out there as a download for people, and I've probably got enough email addresses of people in the room to make that happen. So between us, we'll try to get that out, and so people can get a sneak preview in the next few weeks of the book and what we're going to cover. Okay.
All right. Thank you, guys.